much of his art is focusing on things that his father did, in fact, his father's work. Steve is with us. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Steve.
Now, this exhibition is focusing on a body of work you've put together, and it follows on from what your father did for a living. I guess you better explain.
Okay, the show is titled Atomic Fish and Fishermen. It is at the Warrnambool Art Gallery from May 12th to the 10th of June, and it relates to the working conditions that my father underwent for 30-plus years at the Hanford Atomic Energy Commission, which is a reservation about, it was an hour's drive from our hometown in eastern Washington State. He worked there for 30 years, as I said, and during that time, it turns out that he was acutely and chronically radiated 365 times. That averages out to at least once a month he came home, and the term he used was crapped out, which meant that he had had supposedly the maximum amount of radiation that a human could withstand. As a process of this, over 30 years, he developed cancer and died. It sounds to me like, you know, the nuclear industry has a potential for being the new asbestos claim in the future.
He worked there for 30 years.
For 30 years, yes. And in that time, he worked around and about the face of the reactors. He also worked in the processing plant where they were making nuclear-grade materials for bombs. The original weapons material for Nagasaki actually came from the Hanford Atomic Reservation. It was an area that was isolated, so-called. It was right on the banks of the Columbia River. My father and I used to go fishing in lakes. They were called the pothole lakes, and they were downwind from the reactors. This whole area, it's called the downwinders of the Columbia Basin, have a high incidence of cancer rates. And these are people that didn't work in the reactors. They were just people that were living and eating and drinking the produce from the surrounding area, and we thought really nothing about it. But it is a rather scary scenario, especially when I read any time in the papers here that nuclear energy should be part of our mix of energy because it's so-called emissions-free.
Yeah.
If you calculate in all the carbon footprint for the manufacturing of the components that would go to build a reactor, which will take 20 years minimum to build, it will never, ever regain that carbon that was caused in the manufacturing to be saved by a carbon-free emission.
In the life of the plant, it won't ever get itself back on an even keel or a par.
No. And if you consider the rods that go to fire the plant, take a huge amount of energy to create. There's also another carbon footprint. Then you compound that by thousands of years of carbon footprint of looking after the waste. I just don't see how the figures add up.
What was it like as you were a child, though, growing up around this area? You said you went fishing with your father. It was just part of the scenery, Steve.
Absolutely. You know, we were lulled into a false sense of security, I suspect. My father was rather amoral about his work, and it was top secret for probably 20 of those 30 years that he worked there. He was not allowed to speak about his work. Obviously, they were making weapons-grade material, so it was very quiet. We didn't know that until 20 years ago. So growing up there was a beautiful area. You know, it was deer hunting in the – I shouldn't talk about shooting, but, you know, that's America. and there are more guns there than I think in any arsenal in the armies of the world. But deer hunting and fishing and, you know, it was an outdoor life, and it was wonderful. Places that I used to swim on the Columbia River, it was a lagoon, a swimming lagoon, was closed after they found nodules of all sorts of contaminants from the plants that were 30 miles away.
But did they not also experiment with releasing radiation from Hanford?
Absolutely. There is an article, I read this in Australia, there is an article in The Age a number of years ago called America's Dirtiest Secret. And in the film Silkwood, even Hanford is mentioned with rods going amiss. So you have this case where they're experimenting. They wanted to be able to see if they could find out if the Russians were, in fact, processing uranium into weapons-grade material. So they thought if they released radiation across the United States, it would just dissipate harmlessly. As a consequence, the wind turned it around and dropped it right back into the Columbia Basin. So, you know, it didn't harmlessly dissipate. And the records show that what they released experimentally over the years is far greater than what Chernobyl left off when it, you know, when it imploded. And also Three Mile Island. So you combine those two, and they're a mere drop in the ocean compared to what was released experimentally.
So, it's extraordinary.
You know, does all this have a relationship to higher incidence of cancer rates in certain areas? You know, perhaps we'll know in the future.
Yeah. Steve, I mean, for someone who grew up in Australia, in a country without nuclear power, it's an extraordinary sort of thing to think you would grow up with all that going on around you and a father who did what he did. But then also you talked before about going fishing with your father. How often did you get fish that you just didn't want to eat coming up on the end of your line? Were you getting mutations?
Well, there was a bit of hyperbole that suggested through the gallery here that I caught two-headed fish. I'd like to state categorically we never caught two-headed fish. That's really a Homer Simpson sort of scenario.
Okay.
But what we did catch is fish with obvious deformation to their dorsal fins.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes their lips would be overshot. We just put it down as, you know, genetic variations and didn't think much about it. It's only in the last few years since I've been working on this exhibition that I started thinking seriously, you know, what we were catching. Oftentimes when we were cleaning fish, we'd find a fish filled with tumors. Obviously, those were discarded into the scrap heap.
Yeah.
But that was a rare incidence as opposed to a constant. Now, if the swimming areas had nodules of radioactive material in the floor of these lagoons, it only goes to think that anywhere around the lakes that there's going to be residual qualities of radioactive pollution.
Indeed. So how do you translate this story that you've just told us about your growing up and your feelings into art?
Well, what I've done is I've made a short video moving image that's part of the installation piece that runs for 4.5 minutes. And it's a collection of drawings and paintings of fishermen in boats, fish going into an aggressive sort of mode. There are images of nuclear weapons being exploded that have been altered and generated into this 4.5 minute looped motion image. And it starts with, you know, people in boats, and then it ends up where it takes them, which is into, you know, death.
Mm.
So, you know, it doesn't sound like a really happy sort of scenario, and it's not meant to be, you know, because I really believe that, you know, in the future there could be safe ways of dealing with nuclear energy. Currently, there aren't. And Australia has huge wealth of uranium to exploit. But perhaps we should leave it in the ground until we find safe ways of disposing of the waste that we know are going to maintain it for 250,000 years.
And that is one of the big questions that still remains around.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. You know, and this image was shown previously in 2000, at the end of 2007, at the Ballarat Fine Arts Gallery, which was my hometown, obviously, so I had other works included in that. At the Warrnambool exhibition, it's the moving image and a collection of bottles. Now, these bottles are representative of my father's monthly collection of his urine. Can I say that on the radio?
You can. Well, you just have.
I already have,
yeah,
haven't
right.
I?
Yeah.
So these were collected over a 5-day period monthly, collected by a government truck in little lead-lined boxes to, you know, keep them from contaminating other samples that they collected. And over 30 years, these bottles were collected, and it became essentially the sampling and research that they did on the effects of radiation and onto the human body.
Mm. Extraordinary story, Steve.
It is really a truly amazing story. And, you know, my father's just one of the many thousands that have undergone this, and many of his workmates are also dead, too.